The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
But first, as negotiations continue over the formation of the 34th Dáil, its exact structure remains undecided. With those talks underway, it begs the question, how much of an extra expense will this new government be? I'm joined by Colm McCarthy, economist and journalist with the Irish Independent, to talk about all of this. Colm, good morning.
Good morning.
You have seen many such negotiations in the past.
Yeah, and there's a kind of a formula that the two main parties, Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, will lead the process. They will be influenced by officials, senior officials, whose cards have been revealed a little bit in the report of the Fiscal Council the last few days. I think there will be a requirement that there's a five-year view. This is not just a programme for government patched together to get us through the week kind of thing. This will be a five-year view because the two parties, both Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, have made it clear that they intend to push ahead for nearly a full term. So they'll have to put in, and they're required by the European Union to do it anyway, medium-term fiscal numbers. They'll have to put in budget numbers.
So they have to make some assumptions about Trump and trade wars and tariffs and all of that. I mean, how do you do that since he is so unpredictable and therefore the outcome is unpredictable?
Yeah, well, the fact that you cannot predict that a particular catastrophe is going to occur doesn't mean that one is not going to occur. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Some damn thing will happen.
So the precautionary principle prevails.
The precautionary principle applies. And I think that kind of summarizes what everybody except the participants in the general election have been saying for the last several
now,
months.
The you know, the old adage that you campaign in poetry and you govern in prose. Isn't that the bottom line here? That parties know. I mean, particularly the minor parties who at the best outlook that they might have had would only have been a small proportion of any government, whether it was a Sinn Féin left-wing government. And yet they propose in their manifestos things that could only be implemented if they actually had a majority themselves in government.
Well, there's that. And I think that will be a motive that will drive Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael. And I'm not really an expert on political stuff. But you can see that they've made a calculation that recruiting a half a dozen independents, if that's what's required, is not going to cost as much as reading through the full manifestos of, for example, both the Labour Party and the Social Democrat Party and trying to accede to all the various bits and pieces.
There is a costing that goes on. They say, well, if, for example, in the old days, Jackie Healy-Ray, if we fix up the road from the main Dublin-Killarney road to Kilgarvan, that's grand.
Yeah, he'll be happy. And some of the potential independent deputies have kind of hinted at things already. For example, I was listening to a man who's been elected as an independent deputy for one of the Cork constituencies, and he announced that he must have a promise that the M20 motorway from Cork to Limerick be on the programme.
But that's there already.
No, it's not. It's a terrible road. It goes through Charleville.
What I'm saying is that is the parties want it.
Yeah, of course it is. And every Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael deputy in Munster is whinging that this is what they want.
So is he laying out his stall so that he can claim it when it happens?
Well, I can't read his mind. But certainly if I was negotiating for Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, I'd say, oh, snap, you can have that because it's going to happen anyway. I mean, it's a good example of the kind of thing that goes on here. After the whole Bord Snip episode and the austerity
program. And you're involved in the Bord Snip. Yeah. One and two.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, there are certain hat tricks that should not be completed. But the process that actually played out in those years was really slashing the capital program. That's really what they did. Everybody thinks that they took bread out of the mouths of the poor and all that sort of stuff. That's not really true. There were cuts in public service pay, that's true, and various other economies.
But welfare payments were by and large protected.
They were, and old age pensions and things like that were not cut. And that was kind of an achievement for which...
So are we paying the price now for a lack of investment in critical infrastructure at that stage?
I think that's absolutely right, Pat. And it's been a pattern here down the years. And it's the big downside of being adventurous with the public finances. The real downside is that when push comes to shove, if you're not able to borrow and you've taken too many risks... You've got to do something pretty quickly. And what do? You slash the capital program.
So roads don't get built, hospital beds don't get increased, all of that.
In 2011, 2012, around that time, while politicians were talking about something else, what was actually happening is that projects that had been started got completed, including ones that may not have been that smart.
This is, I've started, so I'll finish kind of thing.
Kind of. And nothing got commenced. And a good example was the road from Cork to Limerick, which had been in the roads programme for donkey's years. And it was ready to go. They had picked the alignment. They had fellas with shovels at the ready. No money. So they've just... and they don't announce, oh, we're going to cancel, we're never going to build it. We'll do it later kind of thing.
Yeah.
And of course now... they're back to square one because there is a whole new generation of NIMBYs living down in that part of the country who want to reopen.
And there'll be environmental assessments that will be much more rigorous than
heretofore. They will discover breeds of birds that nobody ever knew were there and so on that have to be protected. So the thing will cost extra. And that pattern has been there for a very long time.
Now, you know the talk of it.
It's politically easier to pretend to be just deferring the capital programme.
Yeah, you know? But you know this talk of a Department of Infrastructure and a Minister for Infrastructural Development sounds like a good idea.
Yeah.
And you'd remember, and I recall, the outfit called An Furas Forbartha.
I do, yeah.
Who had this kind of role in, and they're not the CSI, but they had a role in kind of saying, these are the numbers of hospital beds we're going to need. These are the roads we're going to need. These are the schools we're going to need.
Yeah.
And this is how we're going to go about paying for it.
Well, that's supposed to be done by the National Planning Framework, which is being reviewed. I can see some advantages in having a single Department of Infrastructure, but you want to be very careful that it doesn't turn out to be another flippant quango to compete with all the other quangos. And to play the blame game, I wasn't me, you know. I often think watching, say, the fiasco over the children's hospital and people trying to explain how it cost nearly three times what it was meant to cost. And it's a bit like a bunch of young fellas playing football and one of them falls to the ground covered in blood and the referee goes, oh, so what happened? And they all say, it wasn't me, ref, it was him, you know. And when you've too many ministries and too many quangos and boards and stuff like that, nothing is anybody's fault.
But there was a very simple explanation for that, but none of them will admit it. It's in the wrong place.
I think in the case of the Children's Hospital, I was persuaded that a good place for a national institution is somewhere out on the M50 where you can get at it from around the country.
Not Dublin 8.
Yeah, and you know, where it is a black hole for traffic anyway. So I wouldn't like to be driving up from...
But they're about to repeat the mistake by building a maternity hospital in Dublin 4 at St. Vincent's Hospital, where, as far as I know, there is not a baby boom in Dublin 4.
No. On the other hand, it had to be somewhere. You know, it's convenient to UCD, where all the consultants are professors of medicine, so they can
nip across the road.
They can walk up to give a few lectures. I don't know why it was picked. It started life it was coming in the Matter when Bertie was Taoiseach, which is a pure geographical coincidence, of course. And it's ended up in Vincent's. And it's an awkward enough site, Vincent's. You know, there's not a lot of room
but
there.
But I'm thinking of all the people who will be required, extra people to work there. Where are they going to get accommodation at any kind of affordable price near Dublin 4?
The trouble is, everybody in politics, it seems to me, is in favour of building more houses, but not here. So everybody wants more housing to be built somewhere else. And there's really been, in Irish politics, an epidemic of NIMBYism over the last 15 or 20 years. And it's going to take an awful long time to get rid of it. It's interesting, yesterday, Keir Starmer did a relaunch of the Labour Party's government programme.
Big thing about change, wasn't it? Change.
Yeah. No, well, he went a bit further than that. They have threatened local authorities, which get a lot of their money from central government. They've threatened local authorities that if you don't sell more land, you ain't getting no more money from the Treasury. And in Ireland, the local authorities are very shy about collecting money and increasing property taxes, which are very low here. And they're very good at saying, well, no, we don't want any more zoning around here. In the greater Dublin area, there's an awful lot of underutilised land. And I don't mean small scraps of land in the central areas of the city. I mean green fields now out on the edge of the city. Loads and loads of them. But they're not zoned. They're zoned amenity, whatever that means. Mm.
But you don't want to have a concrete jungle where there are no playing pitches, where there's no park for people to recreate in, particularly if they're confined to a block of flats that only has a balcony as its green space, which is crazy stuff.
A lot of people would be very pleased with a flat in a nice block.
Initially, and then they have kids and they can't cope.
Yeah, well, don't forget that, you know, the housing market is dynamic. People change their jobs, they change their lifestyles, they get older. Most people do change where they live every now and again. But the real problem in Dublin is that we have built, and it's taken 40 or 50 years, a great big urban sprawl. The city is incredibly low density.
But you're talking about zoning more land for more of the same.
Well, not necessarily. I mean, there are parts of the city where there has been a reasonable development of apartments, which is what's in greatest demand. And they're quite pleasant. But there's large areas of Dublin where there's green fields as far as the eye can see. It's very instructive to go and cruise around the M50 and keep your eyes open. There's plenty of land right, left and centre.
But the question is, what do you build now? Is the day of the 2-3-bed semi, say, gone? Where you have your own driveway, where you can park your car and charge your car.
Yeah.
Is that gone?
I don't think so. What I hope is gone is the era where you can see green grass to the far horizon within a few miles of Dublin. It's not the case that the green fields are all down in the Midlands. You'll find plenty of wide open. I'll give you a good example that you might know. Down beside Croke Park is the old Clonliffe Seminary.
Mm-hmm.
That's the size of a small farm now. You wouldn't know because of the trees around it, but if you wander in someday to walk around, it's very instructive. It's 30 or 35 acres, and it's walking distance. It's not much further.
Who currently owns it?
It did belong to the Archdiocese of Dublin. They decided they didn't need a seminary anymore. I think the Archbishop kept a few acres for growing roses or whatever, and the rest of it now belongs to one of the big building firms. And they tried to get permission to build several thousand apartments on a place that's the size of a farm now, a few years ago. And there was every politician in the area was against it, including Sinn Féin. Mary Lou MacDonald was one of the leaders of the opposition. I'm not picking on her particularly. The residents said, oh, we don't want any houses around here. And if there is something that's the size of a firm is now in a redundant use, which it was, the owners have disposed of it. There's some builder company trying to build apartments to rent out to people. Rents are gone through the flipping roof, and everybody's against it. Now that issue, Starmer seems to have decided that in Britain, the problem with urban planning is not really a lack of money. It's a lack of space to build housing, and there's plenty of empty space. There's a huge amount of it around Dublin. I don't know if you ever flew into Dublin Airport when they land from the west.
Mm-hmm. I have.
Mostly...
It's green fields.
But mostly you land from east to west. Yeah. That's the runway 1028, it's called. But sometimes the guy comes in over Killiney Hill, depending on where the wind is, and they land from west to east, and it's an absolute eye-opener. You know, there is enough land out there to build another city.
Well, Colm, this process will go on for a while. Is Pascal Dunne right? We played a clip at the beginning that you're better off taking your time and getting it right than having, I suppose, some sort of schism in the middle of the term of government.
Yeah, and I think the government, they haven't been shouting about this. They will have read the Fiscal Council report, which points out some of the things that you just mentioned. Some damn thing might go wrong, might be Trump with tariff wars, it might be changes in US domestic tax law. That's all they need to do to put a stop to the gravy train from multinationals. They're allowed to park profits abroad indefinitely without levying them to US tax, and so on. There's a whole string of things that could go wrong. Plus, the government has fallen in France. The government has kind of fallen in Germany too, and there will be elections in both of those places soon. So there's a lot of different things that can go wrong, and it only needs one of them the bookie always has more horses running in the race than you have. and one of them usually wins.
All right. Colm McCarthy, economist and writer for The Currency and columnist, thank you very much for joining us in the studio.
All you need for
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.